Welcome to the Thrilling Tales of Adventure. I'm Mardell, reading Martin Connersby's Vengeance by Jeffrey Farnall. Chapter 9. We Fall Among Pirates. At my sudden coming, they fell silent, one and all, staring from me to Joanna, where she stood beside a buxom, swaggering, ruffling fellow, whose mustachios and beard were cut after the Spanish mode, but with a monstrous great periwig on his head surmounted by a gold-braided looped hat. His coat was of scarlet velvet, brave with much adornment of gold lace. His legs were thrust into a pair of rough sea-boots, and on his hip a long curved hanger, very broad in the blade. "Us fish," said he, looking me over with his sleepy eyes. "Is this your Englishman, Joe? And what must we do with him? Shall he hang?"
"Mayhap, yes. When 'tis so my whim," answered she, twixt smiling lips and staring me in the eyes.
But now, and all at once, from the wild company rose a sudden hoarse murmur that swelled again to that fierce, exultant uproar, as down towards us paced Don Federico.
"Aha! 'Tis the Marcus!" they cried. "'Tis the bloody Marcus! Shoot the dog! Nay, hang him up! Aye, by his thumbs! Nay, burn him! To the fire with the bloody rogue!"
Unheeding their vengeful outcry, he advanced upon the men, and these ravening for his blood, viewing their lowering faces and brandished steel, with his calm, dispassionate gaze, and very proud and upright for all his bodily weakness. Pausing beside me, he threw up his hand with a haughty gesture, and before the command of this ragged arm, they abated their clamor somewhat. "Of a surety," said he in his precise English, "it is the Captain Belvedere. You captured my daughter, my son, in the Margarita Carrick 3 years gone. 'Tis said he died at your hands, Signor Capitan."
"Not mine, Don, not mine," answered this Belvedere, smiling sleepily. "We gave him to Black Pompey, to Carbonado."
I felt Don Federigo's hand against me, as if suddenly faint. But his wide-eyed gaze never left the captain's handsome face, who, aware of this look, shifted his own gaze, cocked his hat, and swaggered.
"Stare your fill now," quoth he with an oath. "'Tis little enough you'll be seeing presently. Aye, you'll be blind enough soon."
"Blind, is it, Captain? Ha! Good!"
cried a squat, ill-looking fellow, whipping out a long knife.
"Hung my comrade Jim."
"I did.
So here's a knife. Shall blind him when you will, Captain, by hooky."
And now he and his fellows began to crowd upon us with evil looks. But they halted suddenly, fumbling with their weapons and eyeing Joanna uncertainly, where she stood hand on hip, viewing them with her fleeting smile.
"Die he shall, yes," said she at last. "Die he must, but in proper fashion and time, not by such vermin as you, so put up that knife, you hear me, yes?"
"Hang my comrade Jim, did, along with many others of the fellowship,"
growled the squat man, flourishing his knife.
"Moreover, the captain says blind, says he. So blind it is, says I, and this knife too."
The growling voice was drowned in the roar of a pistol, and dropping his knife, the fellow screamed and caught at his hurt.
"And there's for you." "Yes," said Joanna, smiling into the man's agonized face. "Be thankful I spared your worthless life. Crawl into the boat, worm. Wait till I'm minded to patch up your hurt. Go."
For a moment was silence.
Then came a great gust of laughter, and men clapped and pummeled each other.
La Cluebra, they roared. Tis our Joe, tis fighting Joe, sir and sartin. Tis our luck, the luck of the brotherhood. Ha, Joanna!
But tossing aside the smoking pistol, Joanna scowled from them to their captain.
Hola, Belvedere, said she. Your dogs do grow out of hand. 'Tis well I'm back again. Now for these my prisoners, seize them up, bind them fast, and heave them aboard ship.
Aye, but, said Belvedere, fingering his beard, why aboard, Joe, when we may do their business here and prettily? Yon's a tree shall make notable good gallows, or... Oh, look now, here's right plenty of kindling, and driftwood shall burn em merrily, and 'twill better please the lads.
But then I do pleasure myself.
Yes, so aboard ship they go. Well, look now, Joe, said Belvedere, biting at his thumb. 'Tis ever my rule to keep no prisoners.
Save women, Cap'n,
cried a voice drowned in sudden evil laughter. So, as I say, Joanna, these prisoners cannot go aboard my ship.
Your ship? Said she, mighty scornful. Ah, but 'twas I made you captain of your ship. And 'tis I can unmake you.
Why, looky, Joe, said Belvedere, gnawing at his thumb more savagely and glancing towards his chafing company. The good lads be growing impatient, being all heartily for ending these prisoners according to custom.
Aye, Cap'n,
cried divers of the men, beginning to crowd upon us again.
To the fire with them! Nay, send aboard for Black Pompey. Ah, Pompey's the lad to set him dancing Indian fashion.
You hear, Joe, you hear, cried Belvedere. The lads are for ending of them sportive fashion, especially the Don. He must die slow and quaint for sake of the good lads as do a hang a rotting on his cursed gibbet e'en now. Quaint and slow. The lads think so, and so think I.
But you were ever a dull fool, my pretty man, yes, said Joanna, showing her teeth. And as for these rogues, they do laugh at you, see?
But as Belvedere turned to scowl upon and curse his ribalds, Joanna deftly whisked the pistols from his belt, and every face was smitten to sudden, anxious gravity as she faced them.
I am Joanna,
quoth she, her red lips curving to the smile I ever found so hateful.
Oh, Madre de Dios, where now are your tongues? And never a smile among ye? Is there a man here that will not obey Joanna? No, Joanna that could kill any of ye single-handed as she killed Sestiforo.
At this there was an uneasy stir and muttering among them. And Belvedere's sleepy eyes widened suddenly.
Apes, cried she, beslavering them with all manner of abuse, French, Spanish, and English. Monkeys, cease your chattering and list to Joanna. And mark, my prisoners go aboard this very hour, yes. And today we sail for Nombre de Dios. Being before the town, we send in a boat under flag of truce, to say we hold captive their governor, Don Federigo de Cosalva y Maldonada, demanding for him a sufficient ransom. The money paid, then we will fire a broadside into the city, and the folk shall see their proud governor swung aloft to dangle and kick at our main yard. So do we achieve vengeance and money both. From every throat burst a yell of wild acclaim, shout on shout.
Hey, lads, for Captain Joe, 'tis she hath the wise head, mates. Money and vengeance, says Joe. Shout, lads, for fighting Joe, shout.
And "What are your big rogue, Joe?" demanded Belvedere, scowling on me. "He," said Joanna, curling her lip at me. "Ah, la la, he shall be our slave, till he weary me. So, bring them along." But now and all too late. Perceiving death to be the nobler part, even as Don Federigo had said, I determined to end matters then and there. Thus returning from Joanna's baleful smile, I leapt suddenly upon the nearest of the pirates, and felling him with a buffet, came to grips with another. This man I swung full-armed, hurling him among his fellows, and all before a shot might be fired. But as I stood fronting them, awaiting the stab or bullet should end me, I heard Joanna's voice shrill and imperious. "Hold, lads, you are 12, and he but one and unarmed. So, down with your weapon, down, I say. You shall take me this man with your naked hands. Ha! Fist, yes, smite then. Bruise him, this shall never kill him. To it, with your hands, then. The first man that draweth the weapon, I shoot. To it, lads, aha! At him, then, good bullies." For a moment they hesitated, but seeing Joanna, her cheeks aglow, her pistols grasped in ready hands, they laughed and cursed, and loosing off such things as incommoded them, prepared to come at me. Then, perceiving she had fathomed my design, and that here was small chance of finding sudden quietus, I folded my arms, minded to let them use me as they would. But this fine resolution was brought to none account by a small piece of driftwood that one of these fellows hove at me, thereby setting my mouth a-bleeding. Stung by the blow and forgetting all but my anger, I leapt and smote with my fist, and then he and his fellows were upon me. But they being so many, their very numbers hampered them, so that as they leapt upon me, many a man was staggered by kick or buffet aimed at me. Moreover, these passed their days cooped up on shipboard, whilst I was a man hardened by constant exercise, scarce conscious of the hurts I took as we reeled to and fro, locked in furious grapple. I fought them very joyously, making right good play with my fists. But ever as I smote one down, another leaped to smite, so that presently my breath began to labor. How long I endured, I know not. Only I remember marveling to find myself so strong, and the keen joy of it was succeeded by a sudden weariness, a growing sickness. I remember a sound of groaning breaths all about me, of thudding blows, hoarse shouts, these waxing ever fainter until smiting with failing arms and ever waning strength. They dragged me down at last, and I lay vanquished and unresisting. As I sprawled there, drawing my breath in painful gasp, the hands that smote, the merciless feet that kicked and trampled me, were suddenly stilled, and staring up with dimming eyes, I saw Joanna looking down on me. "Oh, Martino," said she in my ear, "oh, foolish Englishman, could you but love as you do fight?" But groaning, I turned my face to the trampled sand and knew no more. Join me next time for another exciting chapter of Martin Conisbee's Vengeance, by Geoffrey Farnall, here on Thrilling Tales of Adventure.